People talk today about, in the United States, a very prevalent culture of disrespect, particularly in regards to children and their parents and teachers. My sister is an educator. She recently retired early from the Hillsborough County school system because she just had had enough. It's amazing how many times kids in a classroom will disrespect their teacher, undermine authority, and inflict mayhem. You say, well, that's nothing new. Well, that's true. But what is new is that teachers used to consult with the parents, who would then make attitudinal adjustments and correct the problem of misbehavior, rather than siding with the children. Sadly, it seems in many ways we have forgotten how to parent. One writer who was visiting an American school in an upper-class neighborhood said that the teacher stopped several times to warn the students of interrupting and misbehavior. And as she was talking, one of the boys belched loudly and said, "Oh, just shut up." The embarrassed teacher responded calmly and said, "That's uncalled for and rude." "Oh, I'm sorry," the boy said. "Please shut up." And the other students giggled. I can't imagine being a teacher today in the typical public school system. How appropriate it is to talk today about honor father and mother. Moses, in Exodus chapter 20 and verse 12, it's a very important part of the Ten Commandments, said, "Honor your father and mother, that your days may be prolonged in the land which the Lord your God gives you." And then in the New Testament, Paul in Ephesians chapter 6, verse 1 and 2, says, "Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise." We're going to talk a little bit later in today's message about what I think that really was. I think it has great theological significance that this is the first commandment with promise. But one thing is certain, this is a key foundational principle that, in my judgment, is the foundation of all parenting. And the reason why so many people are having difficulties with parenting today, my judgment, and is not that complicated, it's because they've forgotten the importance of this principle. I saw this bumper sticker a while back, and I went ahead and purchased it. "I can handle anything! I have children!" As if, again, that's the most difficult thing to do in the world. I certainly agree that having children and raising them to be godly is a challenge. But I do not think it is necessarily all of that difficult to understand what one must and should do. Rodney Dangerfield was famous for his insults, and a comedy routine that I remember hearing where he talks about, "Oh, I just can't get no respect." And he'd give examples and he'd get a lot of laughs out of this idea of "I can't get no respect." Some contexts that can be humorous. When it comes to your own children, however, giving you disrespect, I think about Shakespeare, who said, "Sharper than a serpent's fang is a thankless child." And indeed, there are few things that hurt more than to look down at your own beloved offspring and to see them speaking to you in hateful and disrespectful ways. Years ago, when I lived in Tampa, I used to go to a lady by the name of Valerie regularly to get my hair cut. I always asked for her, and I got to know her quite well. And we got involved in different types of discussions, and one of the discussions that was an ongoing thing, week after week, that I would have my hair done, or hair cut, excuse me, is that, she would talk to me about how she had absolutely no interest in having children. And she said she had some nieces and nephews, and sometimes they would come over to visit, and that they were just a bunch of brats, and most of her customers' children were just a bunch of brats, and she just couldn't stand being around them, and they got on her nerves. And so she was happily married, but she and her husband had decided that instead of having children, they would do something else for companionship. She decided that having Doberman pinschers was far superior to having children. She argued that they provided great companionship, and that when they went out, they didn't get in the way of their lifestyle. You didn't have to worry about hiring a sitter, and you certainly weren't going to have to worry about paying for a college education. And I could hardly believe my ears as this woman compared having pets to having children. And so finally I told her, I said, "You haven't had a chance to meet my two daughters." They were pretty young at the time. But I said, "I don't think you would categorize them as brats. And my wife and I have taught them to be respectful, particularly to adults and most of the places that I worship, and particularly the congregation where I attend. The parents are very diligent about teaching their children to honor their parents and to honor and respect others. It doesn't have to be that way." And she just could hardly believe that that could be the case. And so it actually became an evangelistic tool, because she was interested in coming to evaluate these families and to see if children could truly be respectful. Isn't that a shame that that sort of mentality was something that somebody could hardly believe could happen? It's all because we have a culture of disrespect. In fact, if you don't teach your children early on to honor and respect you as God has commanded as His will, you may find yourself being put in an early grave. I saw this years ago. It's a picture of a woman who, before kids, is the queen of her house and is young and cheerful and healthy. And then you take this picture and you turn it upside down, and that's what it's like after kids. She has aged a lifetime, even though it's only been about 20 years. So we're going to talk about how we can avoid having children be somewhat of a curse and a heartbreak, but instead do what the Bible says and have them grow up to call you blessed and to have some of the just best adult friends you could ever imagine as they leave the nest and establish their own homes. So what do we mean by the term honor? Mr. Webster, help me out. According to Merriam-Webster's dictionary, the term honor has to do with high respect, particularly as to someone's rank or worth, official dignity, to hold someone in public esteem, to give credit, fame, or glory. I appreciate the fact that in the definition of honor is the idea of someone's rank. That's so important because God has given us lines of authority in which He expects us to live, and to live in a content fashion with respect to those who are in lines of authority over us. A parent may be in sin. A parent may be, in your judgment, not worthy of respect. But that doesn't mean that they are not your parent, and therefore, in every way that you possibly can, you still talk to them respectfully and treat them respectfully, even though, of course, you should not enable or engage with them in any sort of sinful activities. David and Saul are a foil in the end of the book of 1 Samuel. And Saul here becomes more and more evil. The Bible talks about that the Spirit of Jehovah left him because he had left the Lord, and that evil spirits were troubling Saul, and he was out trying to kill David. David says, "I'm hated without a cause," which was really true. And David, who was a man after God's own heart, he was just waiting on God's timing, and he spent a lot of years fleeing King Saul, who was out to kill him. And on two occasions, David had the opportunity just to end this whole thing and to kill King Saul. But on this one occasion where he considered doing so, he said his spirit smote him in his breast. because he had considered reaching his hand against Jehovah's anointed one. In other words, Jehovah's king. And so even though Saul had become despicable, he still respected the fact that in God's own timing, that God had still, at this point, still allowed King Saul to be king. And so he was going to wait for him to become king in God's timing and not run ahead. In fact, when King Saul finally dies and David can take over, his statement is, "Oh, how the mighty in Israel hath fallen." He showed him respect even in his death. Years ago, I remember walking down the hall, and my wife was just finishing getting our youngest daughter, Allison, who was about 4 or 5 at the time, dressed and ready to go off to school. And that was the time when Gail would, you know, look for teachable moments and would be instructing the children on a whole host of things. And as Allison was just getting finished being dressed, I remember overhearing Gail say, "Now, Allison, I'm the parent and you're the child, and you honor and respect me as your parent. And your father is the head of our home, and we all honor and respect him, and we submit to his leadership. But all of us are children of God, and ultimately all of us obey and honor God. And that's what keeps us close and together as a family." And I looked around the corner, and there was Allison, and she just had this big grin on her face. It was almost as if God is in his heaven and all is right with the world. I mean, children need clear boundaries, clear ideas of authority and where everyone fits into God's plan. Children need to get that message, and we need to teach that message in regards to what God has said and live that out to the best of our ability. Honor primarily has to do with the idea of rank and lines of authority. I talked a moment ago about the fact that sometimes our parents are not what they should be. I'm personally blessed to have just a wonderful set of parents. My father passed away in 2010. My mother is 88 and still alive. I'm so thankful to still have her in my life. And I appreciate what Abraham Lincoln had to say. He said, "No man is so blessed as he who was born into the home of a godly mother and father." That is so true. And if you can model before your children godly behavior and teach them coping skills and the right kind of principles that will help them be successful in this life and in the next, you've given them the absolute greatest inheritance imaginable. Go back to vines just for a minute. We talk about putting high value upon a person, esteeming them highly, including providing financial support. That's what Vine's Dictionary New Testament Word says about the word honor. Let me state that in family life, all of these things are interconnected, and they are all so important. For example, if you don't honor your parents, your children's grandparents, and they see that, it is sort of hypocritical for you to insist that your children honor you. Think about that. And ladies, if you don't submit to and talk respectfully to your husband, both to his face and behind his back, it's kind of hypocritical for you to expect your children to honor and respect the dad, or to honor and respect you. All of these things interrelate. The Bible talks about widows indeed in 1 Timothy 5 and verse 16. And in that context, widows indeed are to be given honor in the sense that they are able to be put on the church roll and supported. Elders are referred to as being individuals that in some cases are worthy of double honor, particularly if they labor actively in the word. So you honor them and esteem them for their work's sake, and you also honor them by giving them financial support, is the context there 1 Timothy 5 and verse 17. And I want us to remember that there's no age limit on this. That as long as your parents are alive, there is a sense in which you need to bend over backwards to honor them. And particularly in the ancient world, before Social Security and that kind of thing, frequently the parents would take care of, the children would take care of their parents in their old age, because you, as the parent, took care of them when they were helpless and in need of assistance. And then when those roles sometimes reverse, God wanted the children to be there for their parents. And a lot of it had to do with financial support. It's interesting to me that now, most of the time, the parents are continuing to send money to the adult children rather than the reverse, which is the way it typically was in Bible times. But let's not think that this idea of children honor your parents in the Lord, for this is right, is something that is just seen in regards to the parent-child relationship. One of the keys to spiritual interpersonal relationships is that they are interwoven and enhanced by honor, as all the people involved vertically, first and foremost, honor God. It's based upon that vertical relationship of honor that wives are to honor their husbands in 1 Peter 3 and verse 6. And husbands are to honor their wives likewise in 1 Peter 3 and verse 7. God's plan is that there be this sort of mutual admiration society where you both put each other up on a pedestal and feel like you both received better than you deserve. Citizens are to honor their king in 1 Peter 2 and verse 13. They were talking in that context about Nero, who was one of the most despicable emperors that ever lived. History says that he actually took the heart of his first wife and literally presented it to his second wife. And then later, after he got his second wife pregnant, in a fit of rage, he kicked her down the stairs. She almost lost the child. This fellow was despicable. And it's this man who blamed the Christians unfairly for burning the city of Rome and actually took Christians and used them as torches in his garden. I mean, what an awful thing, torturing your fellow brothers and sisters. It's in this context that Peter says, in spite of all that, he's still in authority over you, and you show respect and don't rebel against the emperor or your king. See, this is about rank. This is about living in contentment, even in difficult circumstances. And the young, of course, are to look up to and respect the older people in the congregation. 1 Peter 5 and verse 5 is not talking about elders in regards to pastors or bishops or overseers, but just those that are older in the group. And so honor is something that the Bible commands everywhere. And it is such an important thing to keep in mind when we deal with this very important subject. And this is not something that is new, this problem of a culture of disrespect or a lack of honor. Listen to this quote. Children now love luxury. They have bad manners. They show disrespect to elders, and they love chatter in the place of exercise. Children are now tyrants, not servants of the household. They no longer rise when elders enter the room. They contradict their parents, chatter before company, and gobble up the dainties at the table and terrorize their teachers. You know who's made that statement? Socrates, 2,400 years ago, as he was lamenting the decline of Greek society. You know, Mark Twain said, history doesn't repeat itself exactly, but it sure rhymes a lot. And he was right about that. And any society that begins to have widespread disrespect winds up ultimately being on the dustbin of history. So we need to learn our lesson. The family is the foundation of our culture and of our nation, and when the family decays and begins to disintegrate, so does the nation and the culture. It's also true with Job. In Job chapter 19 and verse 18, this wonderful righteous man is being belittled as he sits in sackcloth and ashes. And he talks about how much this hurt him. He says, "Yea, young children despise me. I arose and they spake against me." The idea is that they were making fun of this righteous man. He says in Job 30 and verse 8, "They are the children of fools, yea, children of base men and women." Notice he blames the parents for allowing the children to be out terrorizing an older man while he is sick and suffering. Verse 10, "They abhor me, they stand aloof from me, and spare not to spit in my face." Talk about disrespect. It's really sad, but there's something about children and teenagers that sometimes can be unbelievably cruel. They can bully other people and do things that just show a lack of maturity. And unless they are properly supervised and taught the proper respect at home, it is no telling what kind of problems they can cause others in the community. When ancient Israel was explained why they were taken into captivity, part of the problem was rebellious children, and God had had enough. I want you to notice Isaiah 30 and verse 1. "Woe to the rebellious children, saith Jehovah, that they take counsel but not of me, and they make a league but not of my spirit, that they may add sin to sin." Think roving gangs. "Now go, write it before them on a tablet and inscribe it in a book, that it may be for the time to come forever and ever." In other words, later on, when the next generation is sitting in captivity, they're wondering, how did this happen? This is why this is happening. This is why you had to be brought into captivity. And a part of the problem was these rebellious youth. He says, "For it is a rebellious people, lying children, children that will not hear the law of Jehovah." And the problem, of course, is parents let it happen. What this does is it explains how this is the first commandment with promise. You remember in the very first slide, back in the giving of the Ten Commandments in Exodus chapter 20, that Moses says, "Honor your parents in the Lord, for this is right." Then he says, "For your days will be long upon the land which the Lord hath given you." My wife used to think that, well, if the kids will just listen to all my cautions — we used to say her middle name was Be Careful Gail — "Now, be careful about this, be careful about that, obviously don't play in the traffic, you know, that kind of stuff. Well, if they'll just listen to all the parental cautions, then the children will live longer and be safe. I said, "Honey, that's probably true, but I don't think that's what Moses had in mind here." I think what he's saying is that God knows that if you don't teach your children to honor you, they won't honor him. And that's often the seat of rebellion. And if they rebel against God and his word, ultimately there will be consequences, and they'll receive the curses of the covenant, and they'll lose the land that God had given them. So he's telling them that in a generational basis, if you don't teach your children to honor you and honor God, then there's going to be consequences. And you're going to lose the land. The ultimate curse of the covenant was captivity. Let me show you the kind of slippery slope that we are on here in these United States of America. Here's a contrast of a study I found fascinating between the top discipline problems in the public schools in 1940 versus 2010. For the last 14 of the last 15 years, a lack of discipline has been reported by teachers as the number one problem in public schools. And I don't want to make a political statement, but constantly throwing more and more money at the problem is not going to solve the problem if it has to do with something that deals with a lack of proper instruction in the home. A result of 40 to 50 years of secular humanism and situation ethics is now bringing home a very bitter harvest. We send our kids out to public schools, and they pretty much are taught that they are nothing but a mass of random atoms, a sophisticated amoeba. They are not allowed to teach anything about a divine creation. And as a result, people that don't get instruction otherwise believe they have no purpose. that they are just here by random selection, and they have no concept of the judgment day and of the fact that one day their eternal spirit will have to stand before God, where they have to give an account for how they live and how they act. And without any concept of a judgment or any real concept of morality, and with the belief that we're just sort of advanced primates, really no better than the animals, except we happen to be at the top of the food chain, no wonder people today oftentimes have very little conscience about all types of cruelty toward their fellow human beings. Let me illustrate it this way. In 1940, the top offenses in schools appointed by their teachers was as follows. Number one problem was, frequently, people were talking when they should not have been talking. The second problem with these ruffians in the 1940s was reported as chewing gum. The third is making noise. The fourth was running in the halls. Fifth, getting out of turn in line. Next, wearing improper clothes. And get this, can you believe this? Not putting paper in the waste paper basket. Those were the top discipline problems that they had in the 1940s. 2010, it's a whole different ballgame. It's the last year for which I have any records. I assume 2017 would be similar. Number one, rape and robbery. Oftentimes assault against teachers and burglary. Several times my sister, who taught a gifted junior high class, didn't feel safe in the classroom. Arson and bombings are not unusual in big cities. And sadly, people who feel like they have nothing to live for and who are in a negative type of environment, the most common cause of death among young people is suicide. It used to be accidents. Now it's suicide. It's interesting to me, suicide is increasing among young people and older people. Young people because they feel like they have nothing to live for, and oftentimes older people, they feel like they've lived for nothing. That's what happens when you don't have some deeper sense of God and purpose in your life. There's a hole in the soul in many people's lives. When materialism doesn't satisfy it, they oftentimes just end their life. Drug abuse and drug pushing, alcohol abuse and gangs, pregnancies, of course, just run rampant, and abortions and venereal disease. Wow, can that even be the same culture? Look how quickly things have gone bad, particularly since they've taken prayer out of schools in the 1960s. In Romans 1 and verse 28, they did not see fit to acknowledge God any longer. God gave them over to a depraved mind to do things which are not proper. We talk a lot about the violence in our schools and in our culture. One half of all violent crime is committed by those 18 years or younger who do not have a father at home. What a difference it would make if we could just somehow or other support the nuclear family and committed and encouraged parents to stay together, sometimes just for the kids, to provide them the right kind of secure environment. Let me suggest that one of the most important things you can do as a Christian parent is to cultivate an attitude of respect. And the first thing I want to focus here is on the fact that you should not allow nonverbal defiance. Don't just wait until the behavior goes bad. Start dealing with disrespect when it starts showing up in someone's attitudes. I want you to notice Proverbs 13, verse 17. The eye that mocks his father and despises to obey his mother, the ravens of the valley shall pick it out and the young eagles shall eat it. That is some of the most graphic language in all the Bible. And that's how God feels about a rebel and someone who has that kind of bitterness and hatred in his eyes toward his own parents and authority figures. So don't wait until that attitude demonstrates itself in some awful behavior. Nip that negative, disrespectful attitude in the bud. Parents, please do not allow your children to roll their eyes at you. My children tried that a few times. Only a few times did they roll their eyes at their dad. Because that is disrespectful, unacceptable behavior. And the one thing that ought to kind of, you know, cause you to respond in a very quick and rapid fashion is anything that indicates disrespect. Make sure your children, when you call them, that they don't say, yeah, or what do you want? How about, yes, Dad, or yes, Mom? And in the South, we used to say, yes, sir. But the point is, when people say that kind of thing, it just sounds so, so pleasant to my ears. And children need to be taught to address older people and to look them in the eye and to treat them with respect, because there's so many different commands in the Scripture that talks about respecting those that are older. And if you call them to dinner and you know they know that you're calling them, but they're busy doing a video game or whatever and they just don't want to bother to come, that is disrespectful. The mom in many cases has worked hard on this dinner and they just don't bother to come. Well, there ought to be some sort of punishment for just ignoring you when it's clear that they heard but just do not want to respond. It's so important to focus in on the right attitude. For example, Leviticus 19, verse 3, we're taught to fear every man, his mother and his father. I used to tell my kids, we'd have devotionals around the dinner table most nights, and I'd say, you know, we teach you to respect your mother and your father and your grandparents and older people and the brethren and your teachers. That has nothing to do with some sort of ego trip where you've got to somehow or other, you know, respond to me with great awe because I'm so wonderful. No, I'm your dad, and God's going to judge me as to whether I teach you to respect me or not. So this is what I do as a faithful Christian. I teach my children to honor me and to honor my wife because that's what I do before God. Yes, you must submit to me, but I have to submit to God. We're all in this together. And dads, if you ever see your children talking back or disrespecting their mother, boy, you need to immediately step in and say, you do not talk to your mother that way. I don't talk to your mother that way, and you're not going to talk to her that way. That is disrespectful. And nip that kind of thing in the bud. And again, watch the tone of voice and talking back. I taught my children that I want to know what they're thinking. I want to know how they feel. It's always okay to tell mom and dad how you feel. And it's always okay to disagree. But you need to do so respectfully. And so we're having a discussion about something, and Amy's a teenager, my oldest daughter, and she says, Dad, I think you're dead wrong about that. And I say, oh, Amy, you know what? I may be, but can we try to rephrase that in a way that's more respectful? What do you mean, Dad? How about, Dad, do you think you might be mistaken? Let's try that again. Role play with your kids. Teach them what you mean. Well, Dad, do you think you might be mistaken? Yes, Amy, I might be mistaken. Why do you think I might be mistaken? And then you continue the conversation, and then you praise her for expressing her disagreement in a respectful manner and in an appropriate tone. See, if all you do is sort of lecture your kids to the point they feel like they can't come to you or they never tell you how they feel, that's too much the other extreme. If they're not talking to you when they're young, are they going to talk to you later on when they're teenagers or when they're young adults and having serious issues? No, you've got to keep the respect and the communication lines open. And a lot of that has to be done through role-playing. I'll give you another true example. Amy was doing something I don't recall that required some discipline, and I said, Amy, that's enough. You need to get up from the table, excuse yourself, and go to your room. And so she was mad. She got up, and she didn't really excuse herself. She just threw the chair back underneath the table, stomped down the hall, and slammed the door to her bedroom. Now, technically, she obeyed what her father had told her. She got up from the table, and she went down back to her bedroom. But she didn't do so in an appropriate manner, did she? So Gail and I walked down the hall, opened up the door. I said, Amy, I know you're upset. That's okay. Sometimes, you know, kids get upset when their parents, you know, discipline them. But you know you have to obey mom and dad respectfully. And I want you to come back to the table, and we're going to do this again. And we're going to do it in the right way. And I want you to very calmly take the chair and put it underneath the table. And I want you to ask to be excused. And I want you to walk down without stomping your feet. And you can close the door, but do not slam the door. Yes, Dad. So she comes back. That's exactly what she does. And then Gail and I just praised her for how she did that and how appropriate that was and how that pleased us and pleased God. And we stopped right then and had a prayer with her right then. We tried to help her to deal with that circumstance. You know, if you decide that early on you're going to make this just an important part of your family culture and what you are as a family, your kids will get it pretty quickly. And it's just a joy to be around them. And you don't have to worry so much about this coming up all the time because you deal with it and it's instilled when they're very young. And I guarantee you, you won't ever think about exchanging your children for Doberman Pinschers. It just won't even cross your mind. But here's the important key. Discipline attitudes, folks. And behaviors will take care of themselves. Think about this way. The tongue, Jesus says, really is the ladle from the heart. That out of the abundance of the mouth, the heart speaketh. So if someone is speaking profanity or speaking angrily or disrespectfully, ultimately the root of that problem is something's going on in the heart. The hands are a reflection of anger and a bad attitude in the heart. And so we would be so much better off if we would focus in on, well, what's the basis of this bad attitude? And try to deal with that and deal with it early. If you nip in the bud your child rolling their eyes at you, and then they stop doing that, you know what? You've just nipped in the bud a whole host of behaviors that often go along with people being disrespectful. I'm impressed with the fact that honoring parents is literally the very foundation of society. And it is significant that it is listed fifth in order of the Ten Commandments. I don't know if you've ever thought about this, but the Ten Commandments are in order for good reason. They're not random. In fact, the first four of the Ten Commandments deal with a person's relationship with God, and the second set of Ten Commandments deal with their relationship with your fellow man. Let's look at the first four. And by the way, I think children need to memorize the Ten Commandments because these are basic moral principles that still apply today. For example, the first command is, thou shalt have no other gods before me. Why? Because there's one God, right? Second commandment, thou shalt have no graven images. Why? Because God is a spirit, and we are commanded to worship him in spirit and in truth. Thirdly, we're not to take the Lord's name in vain. Why? Because God is holy, and we should revere him and live lives of reverence and awe in his presence. Fourthly, we should remember the Sabbath day and keep it holy. The reason why they were supposed to memorialize the Sabbath day is because they left Egypt on Friday with the death of the firstborn, And then Saturday was their first day of rest from bondage. So the Sabbath reminded them of their Egyptian bondage and how God saved them from that bondage. God is the God of deliverance. God is the God that provides rest. And though we now worship on Sunday, we don't commemorate the Egyptian Exodus. We commemorate our deliverance from sin and death and that Christ rose from the grave on Sunday, the first day of the week. But we still ought to remind ourselves the reason we worship on Sunday is because God is our God of deliverance. And it is through God that we find the ultimate rest in heaven. So those principles are still right on. Just because the old law was nailed to the cross and we're not under the old law anymore, doesn't mean these 10 moral principles are still not foundational to everything we do. So those are the first four things you need to teach your children about God and why you honor and revere Him. Secondly is our relationship with our fellow man. Those are commandments 5 through 10. And number 5, the very first part of this foundation of an orderly society, is honor your father and mother, for this is right. And after that, we're told, if you learn respect for mom and dad, thou shalt not kill. Why? Because we need to understand the sanctity of life. And we need to understand the importance of life. Do you think if people really believe that, we have a problem with abortion in this country? I mean, the whole bottom line is people are not respecting human life. And that's a moral principle, the sanctity of life. And thou shalt not commit adultery. Why? Because God wants us to respect our marriage vows and the sanctity of our spiritual marriage covenant. Number 8, we're supposed to not steal. Why? Because we're supposed to respect other people's property. And we're told not to bear false witness. Why? Because God wants us to respect truth. And we're told not to covet our neighbor's wife or our neighbor's possessions. Why is that? Because He wants us to guard our thoughts. And interestingly enough, if you violate number 10, which is covetousness, you violate number 1, it says, thou shalt have no other gods before me, because ultimately Paul says covetousness is idolatry. So 1 and 10 are all connected. Isn't that beautiful? It's known as the Decalogue, and it's one of the first things you need to teach your kids, to honor God and to honor parents and to respect life and marriage and other people's property and to tell the truth and to not be guilty of jealousy or covetousness all around them. Wow. God obviously knew what He was doing in laying out these important principles. So let's go back to the foundation principle of an orderly society, honoring father and mother. Why is this so foundational? Well, let me ask you something. If you're not going to honor your mom and dad at home, then you're not going to honor your teachers in the classroom or your policemen in the community, or your elders in a local church, or ultimately your marriage vows if your marriage starts to get into trouble. You see how this is just a slippery slope? And so much of this starts at home. Let me ask you this. Have you ever known a vandal or delinquent who honored his or her parents? I have not. The vandalism comes because there's bitterness in the heart, and most of the time there's problems at home, and usually not a father present. One of the things I'm concerned about in regards to our culture is that we are incarcerating an unbelievable amount of people in this country. And many of them guilty of violent crimes, and they need to be taken off the street. The problem is, we are dealing with the symptom, the behavior, the crime, and never really looking at the root of the problem. So oftentimes has to do with a lack of a conscience and a lack of moral training that comes when you basically turn the moral training of your children over to the public school system that's not even allowed to talk about God. I really sometimes get concerned when I think about newborns being born into this world, but then I take heart that they're not born primarily into the world, but into a family. And those of you that are Christian mom and dads, you can give your children the oasis of a family that can nurture them properly and teach them these kind of values that can make such a difference in the family. And dads, do not leave the parenting simply up to the mom. Kids need fathering just as well as they need mothering, and both of them need to work together to make this work. We live in a culture where the government seems to think that the man doesn't need to be around as long as the government can be the surrogate father and send the mom a check. Some single moms do a wonderful job, and I commend them for it, but you're working on a handicap, even if you've got a check to support the family, if you don't have a houseband, a husband, to help lead that home and to help discipline those children, particularly teenage boys who need a father's role model in their life. If you guys said amen, that would probably be a good time. Anyway, why is honoring parents so foundational? By the way, that's okay. They do that at home. If children are not taught to respect us, whom they can see, how do you expect them to respect God, whom they cannot see? And by the way, children tend to view their heavenly father through the lens of their earthly father. And if their earthly father is absent, or if he is overly authoritative and not nurturing, as well as indicating proper authority in the home, then sometimes people just naturally have a negative association toward God, their heavenly father. And one of the things I tell dads is that how you treat your children will have a lot to do with whether they want to have a close relationship with their heavenly father, like hopefully they have with their earthly father. And so if you're in a situation where the dad is not the role model that he should be, or he is absent, it's even more important in the church for men to kind of step up to the plate and to serve as good male role models for the children in the congregation. Because we're all in this together, and there's a sense in which we're helping to raise each other's kids to get to heaven. And honoring God and honoring each other and honoring parents and teachers is a very important part of that. Not respecting parents in the Old Testament was a capital crime. Sometimes when I get to this lesson, when I do a parenting seminar, people kind of look at me like, don't you think that's kind of hyperbole, Brother Hunter? Don't you think maybe you're making too big a deal out of this? Don't think so. Because in God's plan, the punishment fits the crime. You know, we live in a culture where typically on a sitcom, if the kids are smart aleck and talk back, they'll almost always put on the laugh track. Like, that's supposed to be funny and humorous. It's not funny at all. In fact, if someone was consistently disrespectful and rebellious and they were 13 years old or older in the Old Testament, it was a capital offense. That's just amazing when you think about it. Deuteronomy 21, if you have a rebellious son that will not obey the voice of his parents, he shall be stoned with stones. Now, that was not carried out lightly. There were many opportunities given. But if you were somebody who was thinking about being rebellious and you witnessed some kid down the street who was a rebel and the community went out and basically executed that rebellious teenager, you think that would kind of nip that idea in the bud? I mean, I think that was God's plan here as far as keeping the whole society in place. In Matthew 15 and verse 4, he that speaks evil of father and mother, let him die the death. Wow, in our culture, that seems just so barbaric and out of line. And frankly, I'm glad that we don't do that today. But the point is, in God's plan, these capital crimes were set up to try to teach people the seriousness of them. Murder was a capital crime, along with adultery and blasphemy and constant rebellion against parents. It's not a funny thing. It's a very serious thing. Please do not let honoring mom and dad go unchecked in your household or in your own life. Here's a major suggestion I make. I do think there's a place for corporal punishment. I think I ought to be saved for acts of defiance. We had a little switch that we kept above our fireplace in our home. And we even put a little masking tape around it and wrote on this little switch, "The teacher." And on occasion, if our children were really, you know, out of line and defiant in some way, that's when the teacher needed to be very carefully used on the back of their legs. It stung, but didn't leave any permanent marks. There wasn't any abuse, but it made a huge impact that you don't disrespect mom and dad. When mom and dad says do something, you don't just say no. There's immediate consequence for that kind of defiance. And I recommend that you save the, quote, spankings for that kind of thing. Because that way you really kind of like draw a line that lets the kids recognize that in our home that is something that will not be done. So here's the conclusion. I want us to all remember that dishonor is serious. It's not something to laugh about. It's not something to just ignore because you're tired. It's a serious thing. Secondly, we're not looking at technical obedience, but attitude that matters. Thirdly, it's a parent's responsibility to teach their children respect, and it must be instilled early if you don't want to be put in an early grave. And finally, it is the foundation of everything else parents do. Don't let your children be impacted by the culture of disrespect that is all around them and in the media. In your home, you follow Christ, and things are different. Bottom line is, we must teach our children to honor us as parents so they will honor God as adults. It is not optional. It is not peripheral. It is foundation to everything. And sadly, we rarely hear this kind of message anywhere but culture. But trust me, what I'm telling you is true. Okay, when we talk about this, people say, okay, now how do I practically instill honor in my children? How does the rubber meet the road? I've given you a couple of examples already, but we are going to have session 2, which is a little shorter. I do that by design so I can have some question answers as we go through this. I taught marriage and family on a college level for 4 years at Florida College. This is an area that I've thought a lot about and prayed a lot about and studied a lot about, and it's just so critical. So let's kind of put our heads together and let's see what we can do to instill honor in the children around us. All right, let's take a 10-minute break. We'll come back, have a song, and then get to lesson.